Have we got an open for this week?
Yes, swear jar. We need to reiterate the swear jar. We've sworn like sailors for two and a half years.
I thought it was that was just the Fincher series. Are we doing this for this?
No.
For this as well? For Joker as well?
Going forward, we're trying to professionalise
up. Oh! I'm 35, Rob. You know what I mean? When do I hit the age where people stop policing what I say?
Stop having a podcast. Don't worry, Ben. Might be soon. All right? Let's get on with it.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, a movie podcast / mental health check-in for two broken brain boys talking around their problems, but not about their problems.
Never.
Laughing at movies, you know, laughing at movies. We don't have problems.
Hey.
But before we get to what we're doing, Ben, let's get into the most important bit of the week, which is how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, man.
Right.
Throat hurts from yelling at people, road rage. You know what I mean? It rained a little bit and everyone drove 25 miles under the speed limit forever. So that was great. How are you, buddy?
I'm looking for the bit in my life where I can dance down some stairs in Juggalo makeup.
Hell yeah, man.
I'm currently at the bit where I'm sort of getting repeatedly smashed over the head with a sign. So
yeah,
we'll move. That may have given the listeners a bit of a clue as to what we're getting into. Tell them.
Today, buddy, we are doing Joker.
We are. Yeah. We've got too much to get into this week. So we were going to get into what movies inspired Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix.
How this touchstone of incel culture came to life on the page.
In what universe can a man get this skinny and still be terrifying?
And most importantly, we're going to try and diagnose the Joker using the DSM-5 manual.
Are we?
Yes.
Are we?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Right.
I've spent weeks on this.
Oh, that's upsetting because it's very little to do in the film.
Yeah.
I want you to picture something, Ben.
Picturing it.
I want you to picture a big red bus going around the United Kingdom with some massive lies on the side about how good Brexit will be.
Oh, that was good. Yeah. They had a water fight on the Thames.
Right. I want you to imagine the Amazon rainforest is on fire.
Well, that makes me sad, but okay.
I want you to imagine widespread protests bringing out millions in Hong Kong.
Okay.
Hundreds of thousands in India. Oof. And about 12 people outside Area 51.
That was the important one.
That was the important one. Yeah, the year is 2019.
2019?
Rob is, I'm still a raging sex, drugs and rock and roll machine on the verge of a third breakdown. And
yeah.
You're
sad, twisted, kind of floating through a weird existential crisis that's been prolonged for the last 8 years.
Ben, you're telling me you've not had a single bit of character development since 2019?
No, I'm working on it. It's a slow burn. Fuck you. This is the drama that you've been craving. This is the 3-hour Vietnam drama that you love. All right.
It's looking more like a soap opera, mate. Just...
My name's Rob and I'm fucking hilarious.
But the year is 2019.
Good.
We're both in different forms of crisis than the one we're in now.
Good.
And Todd Phillips brings the Joker to screen.
Yeah, he
between
does.
55 and 70 million.
That's actually crazy. I thought it would have been way more than that.
Right?
Yeah. To build all them steps.
Weirdly, they've become a bit of a nuisance to the people who live near and use those steps.
Well, I can see that.
Yeah. Did you watch this for the first time for this show? Because I remember not that long ago suggesting that we cover this.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, yeah, probably need to watch that.
Yeah.
And I did it. I sort of told you off. I was like, what? You've not seen Joker? What, bro? Have you not seen Joker? And then you were like, yeah, I've just not got around to it yet. And I'm like, that's rational. People have limited time.
Yeah.
And then you've now brought it. So at a certain point, I imagine you watched it. Please don't say you picked it. Did you just pull a card and go, oh, it's Joker?
So I missed this in the cinema because I'm not a big Batman guy. So naturally, I'm not going to be a big Batman villain solo movie guy.
Also, you never know if you go to a Batman movie and someone starts laughing a bit too loud in the front row.
That's
it could be your last.
That's what I mean. You know what I mean? I can't have someone go all Green Goblin on me. You know what I mean? I don't know DC. Fuck you. It's Marvel.
Oh, no. It was the cinema shooting I was referencing.
Oh.
It was far classier.
Yeah. Okay. That's way better. Okay.
You see, we can't swear, but we can still be terrible people, Ben.
Have I sworn yet? I think I might have. I don't know.
Well, someone's counting. Someone's waiting to send an owl picture to you.
Fuck.
Oh, I'm not editing that out. I'm not editing
Come
that
on.
Out. That's two now.
It might be two, but it might be more.
I don't know. Schrodinger's swear word.
Yeah, maybe. I saw this I don't know, like a year or so after it was out in the cinema, and it was because
right.
everyone was banging on about it. Everyone was talking about it being sort of like, it's amazing. It's not right. a superhero movie per se. And I was like, shut up. It's the Joker.
Right.
Obviously.
Right.
It's a superhero-esque movie.
Did you enjoy it when you watched it?
I blew my absolute nips off me. Honestly, I watched it going to be sort of like, oh, this is another DC romp and it's yeah. going to be goofy and over the top. And then I came out of it and I was like, that is probably one of the most harrowing looks of how society treats mental health that I have ever seen on the big screen. And I didn't even see it on a big screen. And it just broke me, mate. It broke me into pieces. And I got reminded of this a little while ago. Obviously, the new one's coming out. I got reminded of it a little while ago. Watched it again. Very excited for the sequel. It's insane. When did you see it? What's it mean to you? Give me the dish.
I saw it at the cinema. I was very confused about it because I'm a big fan of the comic books Joker not having an origin or having five or six.
Okay.
The idea that he is... Batman is order and Batman is a sort of perverse, there is justice and I will make it.
Right.
And I like Joker, as we covered when we did the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy.
Yeah.
And we talked about Joker being the casual and indifferent unfairness and cruelty of the world.
Yeah.
It doesn't have an origin.
No.
Right?
It just exists. So when, it's just there.
It just exists. It just exists. It's always existed and it doesn't matter where it came from because it's doing things to you right now.
Also, it doesn't matter how you deal with it because it will forever right. just keep coming back and pummeling right, you right. in the face.
Right, exactly. So I was a big fan of that. I was like, I see so much of that in my life. I love it.
Good.
And then Todd Phillips comes along and goes, well, guess who I'm going to give a canonical origin to?
Mm.
And my God, if canonical origin is not a tongue teaser that...
I'm not even going to attempt to say it because I will physically melt.
And then I saw it and I realized that it's not the Joker. Mm. It's Joker. This is... Well, we'll get into what universe
all right,
it's
I've
in,
called it the Joker all episodes so far, but thank you for that, bud. Thanks for correcting me now.
It's not the Joker. It's not the definitive Joker.
Got you. Oh, okay, I see.
It's Joker.
I see.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I misunderstood, yeah. And then I overreacted. So I apologize.
Thank you.
I've written the breakdown this week. It is a right. little different, and I'm going to need your help on this one, mate. Because I've written it with a very specific idea in mind, and I have not communicated this idea to you at all yet. So
for new listeners, let me just quickly communicate to them that this is your last spoiler warning.
Oh, this
we
yeah, that would help.
We talk in quite depth about the movie, and in order to refresh people who perhaps haven't seen it recently and want to know what we're talking about or be reminded of some of the themes of the film, we sort of go through the three acts of the movie at the front so we can just get on with talking about what we want to talk about. It's not some sort of watch along with no eyes.
Yeah, if you don't want the film spoiled, literally pause the show right now, go and watch it, and then immediately come back to us because we are desperate for the validation. We need your attention.
But as you were saying, you need yet more help from
me. I do. I need some help from you. So I've written this with a very right. specific idea in mind. I've not told you about it at all. So here is my chance yes. to, whilst recording.
Lovely.
Yeah. So because this film is quite dark, it's quite harrowing, it's pretty intense in places, it's quite violent in places, but it's mm-hmm. pretty dank all the way through. You know what I mean? So I thought we could do this in a fun way, right? So
right.
we present it in like a fun, bouncy, charming Disney kind of vibe. Do you know what I mean?
Disney, like Disney VHS from the 90s?
Nah, buddy. Like Disney Channel.
Oh, that's great. The one we couldn't afford to have in our homes that we've never seen.
Oh, I've never seen it, no. I've never seen it, but I think...
But how I imagine Disney Channel.
That's what I want from you. For this reading...
I will do this.
I
will do this.
To give me what you think Disney Channel is. And what I need you to do is I want you to kick us off. Act titles included, please, buddy. We're having a
breakdown. Act 1. Hi, I'm Arthur, and welcome to the Disney Channel. World, meet Arthur Fleck, a mentally ill and socially disabled man, struggling to find his place in a bleak and uncaring Gotham City.
I was not prepared for the accent.
He works as a clown for hire, while aspiring to be a stand-up comedian.
Please.
He lives with his frail mother, Penny, and grapples with a neurological condition that causes uncontrollable bouts of laughter. Arthur is continually subjected to mistreatment, both from society at large and his co-workers.
Oh, no.
His encounters with social services and his attempts to connect with others reveal his deep loneliness and despair.
Aww.
The turning point comes when he is attacked by a group of teenagers, setting the tone for his mounting frustration and hopelessness. Just as things are going from bad to worse, social servicing funding is cut, meaning no more therapy and, uh-oh, no more medication for jolly old Arthur Fleck.
I was so unprepared for that accent. You have no idea.
Man, if you think I'm not going to send it, you're a
Yeah, that right? is actually incredible. Fair play. I can't do that accent, but I'm going to give it a go. You ready for this?
All right, Ben, having read Act 1, mm-hmm. and I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thanks.
Having read Act 1, it's exhausting to do, so it's going to be exhausting to listen to.
Got you.
I love it.
Yeah.
Let's keep the writing style.
Got you.
But if you could do a sort of northern advert for a bank or something evoking times Ooh. Of old, think like Hovis Bread.
I got you.
Okay. Warm, comforting, homely Midlands man.
All right.
Talking about times past.
I've got you. I'm not going to... all right. I've got something for this. I've got something for this. But you ready?
Okay.
Act 2. That's sore not raven. Arthur's life spirals further out of control after he's fired from his job for bringing a gun into a children's hospital. So not raven. On his way home, he is harassed by three drunken businessmen on the subway, and in a moment of desperation, shoots them all in the face. That's so not raven.
So not raven.
This act of violence unintentionally sparks a movement against Gotham's wealthy elite, with protesters donning clown masks in his image.
That's so not raven.
Arthur, emboldened by his newfound notoriety, begins to embrace his darker impulses. He learns disturbing truths about his mother, including the possibility that he may be the illegitimate son of billionaire Thomas Wayne.
That's looking like it might be a bit more raven, eh?
Daddy Moneybags, a bit more raven that, isn't it? All right. Feeling betrayed by the few people he trusted, he kills his mother and former co-worker in cold blood.
Oh, that's immediately back to being so not raven.
After appearing at a local comedy club and bombing in front of his imaginary fake girlfriend, Arthur's transformation into the Joker accelerates as he prepares to appear on his idol, Murray Franklin's talk show.
Hi, I'm Joker, and welcome to the Disney Channel.
Yay.
Arthur, now fully adopting the Joker persona, appears on Murray Franklin's show to talk about his stand-up show, but is immediately ridiculed.
Ooh.
During the live broadcast, he confesses to the subway murders and delivers a chilling monologue about society's indifference to the suffering of the marginalized.
Oh
wait, maybe if I go... He then, shoots and kills Murray on live television.
Oh, my God, gasp.
Creating widespread panic and chaos. No, even I can't do that.
Yeah, sound.
This act of violence becomes the catalyst for a citywide riot, with Gotham descending into anarchy.
What?
Amidst the chaos, the Joker becomes a symbol for the disenfranchised. I'm going to be campering it, cementing his transformation. After the city has eaten itself alive, we join Joker in Arkham State Hospital, laughing maniacally. Ha ha!
Was this all real? Did it really happen? Or is this a reflection of my demise?
He escapes from an interview, leaving a bloody trail, whilst dancing down the corridors of the asylum.
Next up on the Disney Channel, some other horribly abused child who in 25 years' time will be horribly mocked for turning it up by the ruthless media giants who throw trauma at children faster than British TV presenters return to their careers after admitted to being a literal nonce.
Okay.
That could go either way. That's either hilarious or it's horrible. Either way, we tried the Disney Channel. We don't know the Disney Channel, but we tried it. You know what I mean?
Well, regular listeners, welcome back to being the only one still tuned in. I've got rid of those horrible new people.
If you are a new listener still here right now, let us know. Drop us an email.
Welcome. If you tolerated that, you trust me, the show's for you.
Yeah, this is it, man. If you're here now, woo, are you in for a treat?
Quick point of order, Ben. Mm-hmm. Is nonce a swear word? And for the benefit of our American listeners who don't speak goblin, what is a nonce?
Pedophile, and it's not a swear word.
Okay, fantastic. That means we're only on three.
Okay. Oh, I put one in the breakdown.
Yeah. So thanks again for taking the lion's share of the freedom. That's
sorry.
Lovely.
Sorry. You get one good more before I get more owls.
Yeah.
Why is everyone sending owls? Where are the crabs?
People are sending owls, Ben, because they know which side the bread is buttered on, my friend. They know who the talent is.
Stop going Disney Channel. You're going to do this all the time now. I hate that I've introduced you to it.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to find it's my new talent now, mate. I've found a new talent. I can do the Disney Channel voice. What I imagine.
Speaking
to be a Disney
of nonces.
Are we sure it's not?
Welcome to the transition. Speaking of nonces, I found your people in this film, mate. Did you spot them?
Sorry. That can't be the transition.
I don't know.
That can't be the transition. Speaking of nonces, you found my people.
I've painted us into a Disney Channel corner. I need to get us out. It needs to go. It needs to go. I'm trying to break.
Just the record state, Ben thinks nonces are my people.
No. Right? No, not at all. Not at all. Okay. It's just a fun word that poor people use for rich people.
Okay.
Yeah, he might be rich, but it's probably a nonce, though, isn't it?
Get to the point, Ben. Jesus
Chaplin,
Christ.
Buddy. Your people in the theatre.
No,
they were watching Chaplin.
We did a 3-episode arc about how he's not.
No, they listened. I reckon they're the people that listened. We tanked, we tanked to numbers of about the attendance in that theatre. I reckon it was them. They listened to your Chaplin trilogy.
Again. I brought the Charlie Chaplin series because I thought as a podcast that covered every movie ever, mm-hmm. it would be worthwhile going back in time, looking at the very foundation of cinema and looking at one of cinema's most iconic characters and celebrities that people know even if they've never seen one of his films. And I was like, well, maybe come with us and we'll show you some of those films. Guess what? No one came along.
Yeah, fat lot of good that did.
Not a single person tuned in.
We should have done Buster Keaton. You know what I mean? We could have done early stunt work. We could have done early wire work. We could have got into a whole little bit like this.
Buster Keaton does all that, but there's absolutely no plot, story, or subtext. It's just look at this man do this thing. It's the Fast and Furious of the 1920s, Ben.
Yeah.
And now I say that out loud, I should have led with that. You're right.
Yeah.
That is 100% your text.
You see what I mean?
I thought it was interesting that something that I brought was it appeared in a film that you love that you could have gone, oh, I've seen that film.
Yeah.
You've seen all of the film that he watches in that theatre. Tell you a film you haven't seen that's probably more important.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know a movie called The Man Who Laughs?
The only reason I know this is because you wrote those three words, Man Who Laughs, right. in our notes.
Well, that surprises me, Ben, because it's a film that's right up your alley. It's a 1928 romantic gothic melodrama.
Oh, continue.
It's directed by legendary director Paul Lenny, about a man who, as a child, is facially disfigured to have a permanent grin on his face.
Oh, don't stop.
I can't keep those. Ben, people have these in headphones. I'm not keeping them. I am keeping those ad-libs in, and they're on you. I'm tempted to add them to the swear jar, but it's fine. No, this movie's super important because it's super important to the character. So the film's part horror, it's part romance.
Okay.
It's a German expressionist movie. Now, I know you're a Fast and the Furious fan, Ben, so what I've gotten written here
is... I like movies from the 20s. I like this.
Right, okay. So there's a film called The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Yeah.
It was Nicolas Cage's favourite film before he saw Paddington 2.
Yeah. Caligari's great.
Right, okay, you've seen that.
Yeah, it's classed as like the first horror film. It's like... enormous.
For those of you who have no idea what German Expressionism is and haven't seen The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, you can look up on the YouTube the video for Living Dead Girl by Rob Zombie.
Oh my God. that's almost...
It's just a Caligari remake. You can watch the entire film, Cabinet of Caligari, with Rob Zombie singing.
That's crazy.
Vocalizing
over
the top.
Yeah, I was going to say vocal. Singing's a strong word.
Singing's a strong word for Rob Zombie. Anyway, Man Who Laughs was a huge, huge part of how Universal laid the groundwork for their Universal Monsters catalogue of films. It was the same makeup guy. It was the same set designer.
Okay.
Like, it's an important movie, right?
Yeah.
In Joker,
yeah.
The childhood damage isn't a grin that's cut onto his face, except it kind of is, because it's an involuntary laugh from childhood damage.
Ooh, it is.
It's not German Expressionism, but it is Scorsese 70s. And the romance is there, it's just with an imaginary lady. It's much darker.
Oh my God.
Do you want to know why they reference this, some would say, obscure 1928 film, Ben?
Go on.
Right. Dear listener, just put into Google The Man Who Laughs.
I'm going to join you. Bear me one sec.
Because Bill Finger, Bob Kane, they disagree as to what their roles are in the 1940 creation of the Joker, but they both agree that his smile is influenced by a photograph. Right.
Wow.
Influenced or traced, Ben. That is the Joker.
Dude, this is the Joker.
That's a photo of the Joker in 1928.
Oh my God. Also, the Spanish name, El Hombre Query. Love
Joker
this.
As a visual character.
Yeah. Dude, this is...
Not original.
Mate.
It's from this film.
There are some thumbnails where it is literally just the Joker. This is crazy. Yeah.
So as time went on, comic book covers would go back and reference this, and they would then use it and as a heavy inspiration. So when Todd Phillips and Joaquin Phoenix were making this movie, they wanted to go back to the source and be like, okay, this is kind of interesting. What can we lift from here?
Yeah.
That's where they get the childhood injury. That's where they get the, this isn't a thing that he's chosen to be.
I love this. Okay.
It's not expressionist in this movie. It's Scorsese 70s
it is.
Study movie.
It is. And speaking of Scorsese,
right.
I've also done a little bit of early referencing on this film, bud.
All right.
King of Comedy, Scorsese movie. Seen it?
Yeah, I have. I remember it being the longest 5 hours of my life, and it's only an hour and 15 minutes long.
Yeah, hour and 50 minutes. Literally feels like 2 weeks. Also, it's Joker told from a slightly different perspective.
It's the exact same plot.
It's the exact same plot.
It's the exact same plot.
Like, Rupert, desperate to be a stand-up comedian, obsessed with a talk show host. It's insane.
Yeah.
But also, De Niro appears in both films, both King of Comedy and Joker.
He does, yeah.
So De Niro appears in King of Comedy as Rupert, mm-hmm. the man who is obsessed with the talk show host, and then appears in Joker as the talk show host.
Yes.
Both Rupert and Arthur Fleck, they both get famous after their appearances on said talk shows.
Yep.
Although,
yes, they do.
Although Arthur is kind of reminiscent to a bunch of different De Niro characters from a bunch of different Scorsese movies. He's got the weird, deranged, delusional antics from like De Niro in Taxi Driver.
It's so Travis Bickle. It's, it's bleeding off the screen.
Right.
The bit where he's got a gun in his flat and he's just mooching about in a mirror.
And then he shoots the wall. Right. You know what I mean? The unhinged anger issues like De Niro and Raging Bull.
Yep.
See what I mean? This is, it's insane. Like Todd Phillips is obviously inspired by Scorsese.
Yes.
And
yes,
it really, it seeps through in the Joker, but not in a way that makes you go, oh God, not this.
Mm-hmm.
It comes through as like a very subtle, very delicate, but a very well thought out and respectable homage. And I love every second of it because he takes it and he does it in his own way, as it, but with like a little tip of the hat, like a little, I see you. I see you.
So here's an interesting thing as to why that is. So Todd Phillips, who directed and co-wrote this picture, is best known for the Hangover movies.
Yeah.
That was his big breakthrough. The first of which is actually a great film.
Incredible.
That you remember being terrible, utter shit until you rewatch it.
Stop swearing, Rob. It's very careless of you. We have a swear jar on the go.
That's one for me, three for Ben.
That's about nine for you.
Anyway, he did a movie with Jonah Hill and Miles Teller before they both became separately but parallelly exposed as massively egotistical, narcissistic poo-poo heads. There we go.
What a vocabulary jump that was.
But it's called War Dogs. I've seen it. It's good, but it's not box office cat.
I think it's a good film.
It's good, but like it's not going to get bums on seats, right? And so at the premiere for that movie, he was staring up at a superhero poster.
Okay,
I'm almost certain, looking at the timelines, was Suicide Squad, which makes this film even less original. And this is a direct quote from Todd Phillips, and he says,
"Okay,
what do people really want to see? The movies that I grew up loving, these character studies from the 70s, you couldn't get those movies made in this climate. I'm staring up at this billboard, and I said to myself, what if you did a movie in that vein, but made it about one of these characters?"
Ooh. He nailed it.
He's nailed it. And he's gone...
He's gone...
You know, there's a lot of criticism at the moment of cinema generally, and the fact, oh, it's all getting stupid and it's all doing this. Oh, superhero movies. This guy tried.
Yeah.
You know, this guy was like, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Let me smuggle one in to the box office by stapling a clown mask on the front. And then everyone went, oh, it's too similar to King of Comedy and Taxi Driver and Raging Bull. What do you want?
Yeah.
How can they please you?
Let the man cook. He's giving you what you say you want, and then you're still not good enough? Right. For shame.
Joaquin Phoenix, weirdly, had wanted to do a project like this for years. He'd been asked again and again and again and again to be in the MCU and had always said no. There's an interview he did with Collider magazine before the movie came out. It'd just been announced.
Okay.
And he claims, Phoenix claims, he had the idea for this sort of movie a few years before Phillips.
Yeah, it's so Joaquin Phoenix. Yeah, it was a great idea, but I already thought of it.
Right. And also, I've got this quote written down, and just reading it, it's so clearly the sort of conversation a man has when he has no idea where the sentence is going to end.
Okay.
Joaquin Phoenix. 3 or 4 years ago, I called my agent and I said, why don't they take one of those characters and just make a lower budget film about it? You know, a movie, but a character study. And why not take one of the villains? And I thought, you can't do the Joker because, you know, it's just, you can't do that character. It's just been done. So I was trying to think of other characters, and he said, I'll set up a general meeting with Warner Brothers. And I said, nah, I'm not going to go. I can't go to a general meeting. So I forgot about it.
Is it? Oh, okay. So that's the end of the quote. Cool.
So
that makes sense.
Then I heard about this idea and I was like, oh, that's so exciting. That's the kind of experience I wanted to have with a movie based on a comic character. I felt like you could get this on screen. That's a man used to being told exactly what to say when.
That is a string of conscience. That's a man who knows exactly how to act when he has an entire dialogue written for him. He's like, yes, I can be this.
Right.
When he's talking on his own, he's like, oh my God, is this what it, am I a real boy? I love all of that. I love all of that. And I'm super.
And I'm glad that they did their own thing. You know, it's not a DC. It's not part of the, you know,
I was hopeful about this.
I was worried it was going to be that.
Yeah, I know. I looked into this because I was getting a bit nervy that it was part of a sort of ongoing idea to do like, oh, here's a multiverse from the DC angle, which is, God, you know, it's kind of happening. But at the same time, I didn't want this to be ruined by it.
It's like, baby, have you stepped into some multiverse? Oh, bollocks.
Oh, it's not coming off. That's another swear word, Rob. God damn it.
That's 5, and the penalty for that is that listeners can send to any of our social media accounts or everymovieeveruk@gmail.com of owls or crabs.
Mainly
one
crabs.
One per listener.
Yeah, but crabs,
owls,
please.
Are better.
There's been so many owls, man. I've dropped
There's been two owls.
I know, and I dropped my phone twice.
Right.
It was horrendous.
And you can't afford to replace that phone. We are both so poor.
Yeah, it cost me £50 and it is financially debilitating for me to replace that phone. But I was nervous that this was going to get ruined by the whole the DC canonical multiverse thing going on. So I looked into it and it was confirmed that this is like a complete standalone. There's no canon connection. I did get a little bit excited and started thinking, well, what about if it's from like an obscure comic run that I'm not aware of, or like an interesting comic line that I can really get my teeth into? Because to be honest with you, I've been desperate for a storyline from DC to be recommended to me for years now, where it's like,
good,
this will get you into DC. And every time I try and get into one, I'm like, it's fine. It's fine. But I thought I was hoping that I could like discover some gold there, but it's not canon to any film. It's not canon to the DC universe. It's not canon to any comic book run as of yet. But that's not to say that it won't be one day.
Right. And oh God, where is this going? What have you done?
I'm kind of hoping that it does. I'm kind of hoping that this sincerely dark, deranged and messed up individual ends up in like another Batman timeline.
Oh no!
Think about how fun it would be, though, right? Like the obvious one is for it to merge with the Batman, because the Batman's quite like a gritty, dark, broody look at Batman, and it's a great film.
Then the movie can be 7 hours long. And
that's
have
what I mean.
Two Nirvana songs in it.
Yeah. Now there's nothing in the way. Yeah, that'd be great. But just let's just take a minute to go on a little thought experiment here. Picture Joaquin Phoenix's Joker
versus Apocalypse.
See what I mean? It's fun, right? But picture him in like the Snyderverse. So you've got Superman just absolutely belting Wonder Woman across Central Park, right? You've got Batfleck.
Right.
Who is like, I'm rich and huge.
Burning people for fun.
I don't need body armor. I have guns. My mom's name was Martha. Where am I?
I've got diabetes.
And then, and then at the same time, you've got Joker just dancing down some stairs in the distance, being like,
that's kind of all he could do. That's kind of all he could do.
But that's going to be so good.
See, I went a different route because I saw your headline, What Universe Is This In?
Yeah.
And I just went, I'm choosing to believe this takes place in the Friends universe.
It's not even a Batman universe.
No.
You just want this to be like what he just bombs Central Perk at some point. Like,
yes. I feel like they're probably sat in the audience somewhere and the reason no one's laughing is because there's just four obnoxious friends who are all apparently poor but have a huge loft in Manhattan and don't need a job.
Yeah. Also, lot of whites.
Right, exactly.
Lot of whites.
Exactly. Oh, don't. I've got a whole thing about the politics on this.
Yeah, same. It's fine. We'll get to it at some point. Never. No, we won't. Why not? That's such a lie.
I just love the idea of like an episode of Friends opens and there's a knock at the door and it's Arthur Fleck covered in rain. He just comes in and sits on the sofa.
Yes.
And they're like, we need you to leave now.
Yeah.
You're the guy from down the hall, right? And he's like, I had a bad day.
But everyone, all the audience is like,
right,
this is so kooky.
Right, and then it's just brutal murder.
Yeah, he just shoots Ross in the face and then starts laughing.
I'm down for this.
Right, I'm down for this.
Good.
But it also led me on a bit of a rabbit hole where I was
it
gives Joker this sort of unique ability to draw influence from every other Joker that's ever existed. And there's some similarities between Jokers of past that I picked up on that I didn't pick up on my first time around, but this time really looking at it was like a great, great little tidbit from Todd Phillips, right? So you've got Cesar Romero, first Joker from 1960s, or the 1960s Batman film. It's incredible. I've gone back and watched it. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The similarities between 1960s Batman Joker
yep.
in the goofiest movie that exists and Joker of 2019.
Right.
The darkest Joker movie that exists.
Is
amazing. You've got this sort of almost childlike innocence.
Right. It's the same makeup as well. Well, it's not the same, but it's very similar.
Very similar.
Yeah.
Over the top, cartoonish, very 1950s, 60s birthday party clown, right?
Juggalo makeup. He doesn't understand how magnets work.
I love that so much. But in all of the darkness of the Joker, Joaquin Phoenix is almost lighthearted.
Yes.
Almost slapstick in comparison to where we've been for a fair few years now with Batman movies, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Everything's super serious, super dark, super like, I'm so goth. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You've also got comparisons with Jack Nicholson's Joker. Horribly traumatic events happened to them that triggered their descent into becoming the Joker.
It's tenuous, but I'll give it to you.
It's tenuous.
Right.
If you think that's tenuous, wait for my Heath Ledger connection, buddy. Oh, pure conjecture corner. Welcome.
Yes.
Come sit on daddy's knee. Hated that. Never saying that again. Apologies, everyone.
Apparently my people are nonces. You were trained to be a projectionist, right?
No.
You're really good at it.
What does it? Oh, I see the joke. I see the joke. Sorry. Go back. Do it again. I'll say yes this time.
No, we're good.
Good. All right. So Heath Ledger, obviously like a mass murdering psychopath with zero empathy.
Yep.
Joaquin differs from that because he exhibits similar behaviors, but not enough to be clinically diagnosed as a psychopath, whereas Heath Ledger does.
Mm-hmm.
And I like this little comparison here of where you're debating whose mental illness is worse, who has less empathy. Who does this, that, and the other? Because all of the personality traits from like previous Jokers, bar one, Jared, are all relevant.
100%. And I think that's an intentional thing that the writers have done because they've gone, let's cherry pick, let's amalgamate, let's do the best thing.
Mm.
The fact that they didn't take anything from Jared is a blessing, but also, let me put it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you think that Joker by Todd Phillips 2019 is a bad film.
Yeah.
You have to love it.
Yeah, you have to, categorically.
Because Jared Leto hates it. He had been assured by Warner Brothers he'd been assured by Warner Brothers that his version of Joker was going to be definitive, that what he came up with, they would commit to, right? And then whilst they were promoting, you know...
Even if you're Jared Leto's agent in that meeting, you're like... Mm,
Jared Leto ended up firing his agent. He fired his agent. He left CAA for WME, right? Looking to make a switch, to apparently denied that it was the competing Joker movies. But he argued that they should stop the Joker project, and he wasn't being treated properly as an Oscar winner.
Didn't he send dead rats and used condoms to his castmates?
Right, because...
And he's not being treated properly. Yeah, okay, buddy.
I'm really glad you brought that up, actually, because it's a fascinating thing when people look at the character of the Joker and they say... That's my guy. That's my hero. That's my this. That's my the other. If you've got, if you're the sort of person who's got a holographic lenticular poster of the Joker on your wall, I am about to upset you. Okay.
Sure. I wouldn't apologize. I would in no way preface this with an apology.
There was no sorry there, mate. It was just a heads up.
Sorry, I misheard that. That's my bad. As you were, insult away, good sir.
Joker films tend to be a bit of a political litmus test, right?
Right.
Because the things that happen to this man are awful.
They are.
The things this man does is awful.
Yes.
Right? And you can look at the fact that he's using the blood from his broken nose at the end to paint a smile, and it's probably the one shot that tells the story of the film.
Yeah.
He gets his nose bloodied again and again and again, and then he paints it into a smile. And if you look at that and you go, society's a villain, and I... agree that like his things are rational, that's a real issue.
Yes.
On the one hand, for Jared Leto with the rats thing, you have to, as an actor, come to a place of empathy with your character so that you can do those actions pretending like you think they're the right actions, right? You have to be able to get into your character's head and rationalize their actions so that you can be motivated correctly in your scene.
Yeah, definitely.
No villain, no guy playing a villain thinks he's the villain. He's got to be from a position of, I'm right.
I believe what I'm doing to be the right thing for the greater good. Yeah, 1,000%.
While the cameras are rolling.
Yes, 1,000%. Yeah.
Jared Leto sending weird stuff to his actors and his colleagues doesn't help anything.
No.
It just makes everyone really uncomfortable on set, which is going to lead to a really bad working environment where people feel they can't be creative because you're taking up all the room.
Yes. No one wants to hang out with a kid with the pockets full of mac and cheese after lunch. You know what I mean? Just let it go, man. Lunch is over.
Arthur again and again and again is looking for help. He's reaching out for help. He doesn't get any. So then when he goes wrong, there is an element of responsibility on the society that created him.
Arguably, there is a point there, yes.
Right?
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that that justifies what he does.
It does not in any way justify his reactions to what this is, because it is insane.
Yes.
Like, I'll agree, right? Mental health, it's not your fault. If you have problems with your brain, it's not your fault.
We both do.
We both do, and that's not our fault. But it is 1,000% our responsibility to not run around and be the Joker.
right. Because also, he's not a hero in this. The scene where he sort of decides that he's going to stop being a victim and become a victimizer, which is his big error, right?
Yes.
Is because there's a woman being harassed on a train.
Yes. Great scene.
He does nothing.
He does nothing.
She has to remove herself from the situation. And the only reason they pay attention to him is because he starts his involuntary laugh. And it's only when he gets attacked
that he takes action.
That he takes action and retaliates. And then he paints himself, and you even had it in the breakdown, you know, he's the instigator, he's the reason people are having these riots. It's on every news report. The only way that he's connected is that the clown mask becomes a way of hiding your identity when rioting.
Exactly.
And the film presents it to you, the viewer, as he did that. But no. He didn't. We're watching the film through the lens of an unreliable narrator who's a diagnosed narcissist who's made it about himself and decided, I have done this.
It gives us a compassionate view into a villain's origin story.
Right.
It's a tongue-in-cheek way of putting us on the wrong side of the law and going, Isn't it sad?
Right. He dances down kinda. Those stairs to a song by famed pedophile emperor Gary Glitter.
Yeah.
If that's not clear enough for you that this is a morally objectionable man.
Right? Right? It's insane that that's the song that is like, it's one breath away from "Do you want to be in my gang?" Do you know what I mean?
Like, it literally is a Gary Glitter song, and it's like... It's like, ooh, is this okay? And I was chatting with somebody I watch it with. They're like, is that okay? And I'm like, no, but that's the point.
Yes.
That's the point. You're not supposed it's not to be supposed rooting to be for okay. this guy.
Yeah. And, oh man, I'm so You're glad right. you brought
it's
this
a,
up.
Compassionate view into a villain's origin is brilliant because he is still it's still a villain's origin. And it may have compassion, but it's not justifying his action.
And the fact of the matter is that he's out there, he's asking for help, and he's not getting the help he receives. He's not getting the help that he needs. Also not his fault. Mm-hmm. You know, the funding shut down and this, that, and the other. And it's very easy to stand there and point the finger at everyone else and go, well, now what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to not become a maniacal murderer
right.
with a hand-me-down gun from another clown? You know what I mean? Like,
that's it's a very really specific way of doing it.
If I had a penny for every time,
it could be broader. You might be there saying, "I'm not receiving my disability living allowance, and I'm struggling."
Sure, like,
it doesn't. You don't have to receive the clown from another. The clown gun.
Yeah, but it helps.
It helps.
It helps me make my point. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Juggalos wave the clown guns in the air. With all this being said and done, and I love this movie. Mm. Like, I genuinely do. I think it's such a clever way to bring people.
Mm-hmm.
Down a peg.
right.
You think you're going into sort of like, you know, oh, the Joker, he's always been kooky, throwing bombs and, you know, blowing up ships and stuff. Heath Ledger was crazy. That was a psychopathic murderer, mass murderer. That's mm-hmm. gonna be an odd one. Wrong.
Well, Heath Ledger's Joker was all the sinister and all the sociopathic that Arthur Fleck is, but you weren't ever expected to relate to him. That's the
exactly
key difference.
Exactly, buddy.
You weren't pulled towards him, and you couldn't smell his breath on your own.
Yeah, no, that. Right? No, that's it. That's just a gross but great way of putting it. It's amazing.
Oh, just quickly, I'm going to rudely interrupt.
No, it's fine. Continue.
There's an issue
with
researching this film. Researching this film made it worse for me.
Oh, okay. How come? It made it better for me.
Yeah, I started reading more quotes from Todd Phillips.
Oh, okay.
Now, I think Todd Phillips is a brilliant filmmaker. He made this film and
incredible.
I adore this film. I think Todd Phillips is a brilliant filmmaker because he left as much of himself out of it as possible.
Okay.
We make a lot of fun of people like Andrew Tate on this podcast because we think it's inherently ridiculous. Because it is inherently ridiculous.
Yeah.
When asked recently in an interview promoting Folie à Deux, the sequel to this movie that's coming out in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Someone asked what Todd Phillips thought Arthur Fleck would think of, like a Batfleck, or, you know, like a full power Batman, not a child in a mansion garden.
Okay.
And Todd Phillips was quoted, now bear with me, "I think Arthur would be in awe of the alpha male that is Batman."
Wow.
"I really do. I think Arthur would look up and appreciate it."
I don't know how to feel about this, if I'm honest with you.
I agree with him because Batman and Joker do have a mutual respect for one another.
Yeah, of course. Yin and yang.
And Joker finds Batman endlessly entertaining and endlessly impressive and all those reasons he never kills.
Yeah.
You know, or unmasks Bruce Wayne, all this kind of stuff. It's the alpha male bit. So then I started reading more and then went back to the sort of quotes that he was giving when this film came out about why he chose to move from comedies to something as dark as this film.
Okay.
Todd Phillips says, "Go try be funny nowadays with this woke culture."
I nearly swore.
There were
articles... get in the bin. There you go.
There were articles written about why comedies don't work anymore. I'll tell you why. Because all the fucking funny guys are like, fuck this shit, because I don't want to offend you. And as we just discussed, Ben, he's a big fan of Taxi Driver.
Yeah, okay.
He's a big fan of Raging Bull. And I'm just sat there going, I'm really happy that Todd Phillips exists. And I'm really happy that Todd Phillips has made this film the political litmus test where it is, where it's not left, it's not right, it's bottom versus top.
Yeah.
Brilliant. We can all agree on that.
Yeah, 1,000%. That's what we can agree on. I hate that you've just ruined all that for me, mate.
I didn't want to suffer alone. I didn't want to suffer alone, and I just wanted it. I wanted everyone to go, when you're having an argument with somebody who's you feel has misinterpreted this film.
Yeah.
Literature shows that technically they are the more correct.
Hate it.
If you're there going, I don't think it is a right-wing film. I think it's quite liberal. No.
No, you're wrong.
No, you're wrong.
You're wrong. You're a bit right.
Right.
You're a bit right for liking this film.
Yeah, but
categorically wrong.
Right. Just don't bring Todd Phillips into the equation, you know?
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, after that absolute bummer, I've done some research this week, mate.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I know. But when I say research, I mean I've been reading scientific peer-reviewed papers. And I've been browsing the DSM-5.
Ben, I am all in favour of you doing research. I am less comfortable with you doing your own research, if that makes sense.
Oh.
If you start posting to Facebook, I've been doing my own research and is a dangerous first
sentence. Yeah. Right? That's the first line in my manifesto. But no, I've been perusing the DSM-5.
Fantastic, which is the
manual,
the big encyclopedia of how people's brains go wrong.
Yeah, it's what's used to diagnose mental illness, right? So you have to hit a certain amount of points on these checklists for each neurological disorder to be, you know, ticked off and go, yep, diagnosable. Yep. So I was looking into it because I was like, well, the Joker's obviously got something going on, right?
Yeah, he's a little edgy.
Yeah,
you could do with a night nurse.
Maybe. Or just
echinacea.
Just a cuddle. Just a cuddle would be nice.
Rose quartz crystal.
Yeah. You've just angered at least one Adam Smart. Control Alt Critique, go listen to him. So I was looking into this. I've got a little piece here that I've plagiarized from a peer review paper.
Mm.
So the paper goes on to explain. I'm just going to read this verbatim because it's got me and it sort of sums it up in a sentence, right? The psychopathology Arthur exhibits is unclear, preventing diagnosis of psychotic disorder or schizophrenia.
Right.
The unusual combination of symptoms suggests a complex mix of features of certain personality traits, namely psychopathy and narcissism.
Ooh.
And then in brackets, it goes on to say, Joker meets the DSM-5 criteria for narcissistic personality disorder. So we can tick that off the list because he exhibits all signs needed for that diagnosis. So there you go.
I should call her.
He also shows the symptoms of pseudobulbar effect due to the traumatic brain injury. Now, pseudobulbar effect
that's
is
after word. that's after that you get the grass type starter, right? And then you give it a red
candle. Yeah, and then it blows up into this pseudo Bulbasaur and then the pseudo Venusaur.
Right, fantastic. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So after his traumatic brain injury as a child, because we find out in the film that he was horribly abused by his mother and his mother's boyfriend.
As does he, yep.
Which means he now suffers from pseudo bulbar effect, which is where the uncontrollable laughter.
Right, okay. That's fascinating.
Yeah, so this apparent co-occurrence of both mental disorder and a neurological condition may be confusing for audiences trying to understand mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes on to explain, it's a very detailed paper where it starts discussing about how people who aren't necessarily looking into mental health or so clued up on mental health or some of the issues that are surrounded with, you know, mental illness, it might be a bit confusing to those people to look at this film and go, oh my God, is this what it is? Mm-hmm. Is this what it's like?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you're sat in a position where you think, I'm perfectly mentally well, which is some of you, I mean, not many of you listen for obvious reasons, but for those people who've got friends who are normal, they sometimes don't necessarily know what that can look like. And I think we do our part to go, you know what? We're not all getting clown guns and wearing juggalo makeup. Some of us have just got podcasts.
Unfortunately. Some of us just don't have the right clown friends. You know what I mean? There's an interesting point made there. And I like this because it sort of feeds into what I took away from this film. And the main thing that I took away from this film is, do you think that this helps or hinders the public's view on mental illness? Understanding the struggles of mental illness, because I think there's an argument to be made for both.
It's such a work of fantasy in so many regards. I think it's a little bit like saying, does Jurassic Park help or hinder the issue of GM crops? Do you know what I mean? It's like, well,
ooh,
kind of both, you know?
Kind of. Like,
it's in there. It's in there.
Yeah.
It raises the awareness of what's possible, but I don't think anything... I don't think a rational person would draw real life wisdom from this film.
Got you.
Let's put it that way.
Just fans of the Jokers.
And if they do, then they're probably part of the gang, you know? They're probably one of us. Goobble gabble, one of us, one of us.
Or they're on the other side of the fence and they're people with 3D holographic Joker posters on the wall, right?
It's that. It's that.
Yeah, there you go.
If you watch a work of fiction and you go... Oh, I'm going to make real life decisions based on what I saw in that.
Yeah.
Get yourself a poster, yeah. You know?
There was one really interesting fact that I did find out, that right. There is a real life British neurocriminologist, Adrian Raine, who was so impressed by how accurate this film's depiction of the psychology of a murderer was,
mm-hmm.
that in an interview with Vanity Fair, he described it as a great educational tool, and he stated that he was planning to present film clips during his classes teaching his students.
Oh, wow.
And not only did Todd Phillips nail it on like visual representations mm-hmm. of what these conditions can look like, it's to a point, and it's so well done, that right. it's going to be used as educational clips in actual neurocriminology lessons.
Oh my God.
Taught by a real life neurocriminologist. Criminologist. That is a nightmare word.
Yeah.
Why does it?
Criminologist.
God damn. I nearly said nightmare criminologist. Neurocriminologist. I hate it.
Do you know what you shouldn't hate? Is that this is the first ever R-rated movie to cross the 1 billion mark.
Ooh.
So they turned that $55 to $70 million
into a billy?
Into part of the Billy Club, yeah.
Oh my God. The three comma club.
First R-rated movie since the invention of the rating.
That's incredible.
To ever cross that threshold.
That's incredible.
You said you were incredible earlier, and I don't know if I trust it. How are you really?
Okay. I'm great.
Yeah? Do I trust this?
But shite at the same time.
Okay, now I trust it. Yeah, great, cool.
So I'm in a good one, but I'm in an odd one, right? So right. A fair few months ago mm-hmm. now, I went through like breakup. It was very tough.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to make good life choices and I've been trying to make like better life decisions. But there's been this weird, weird fear
right.
surrounding everything that I do of how far off rock bottom are you really?
Right.
How far have you gotten, really?
Right.
And today yeah, I feel fair. Like I found out.
Okay, how?
Today's payday. Right. I was underpaid a fair whack of what I was expecting. So this month, I'm already broke. You know what I mean? Payday, I'm brassic, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't really got much planned. The Full Love of Horror's coming up, so we're going to go hang out at that.
We are. Come join us.
If you're going, let us know. But it's fine, because now it feels like, okay... There's a weird fire been lit in my belly where I'm like, is this what I want to be doing?
Yeah.
And the answer is no.
Right.
The answer is obviously what we're doing right here, right now. This is what I want to be doing.
What we want to be doing.
This is what I want to be doing. There is a fire in me that I'm like, this is where I'm at. This is what I need to be focusing on. This is where my energy needs to be going.
Mm-hmm.
And today just reaffirmed that and sort of pushed me in the right direction. And I was like, I'm grateful for that. Right. So
right.
it's a bad thing, but it's a great thing at the same time. Shortly after getting paid, mm-hmm. much less than
realizing,
I was expecting.
Realizing you'd been completely screwed over, yeah.
But realizing I'm it's just as poor as I was the day before payday.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I went to the Boardroom Gaming Cafe to go see the lovely, lovely people there. Incredible. And bumped into someone who I wasn't expecting to see.
Right.
Take it back a month ago, and it would have been like heart palpitations and a weird
yeah.
panic. It would have
yeah.
been like, oh, my day's ruined now. But because I was already having like a horrible day, it was fine.
Nice.
I just realized that I was a little bit more healed than I thought I was.
Right.
And that was the silver lining in that situation. So I've come away from today, it being a bad day, but I've come away with more motivation,
mm-hmm.
a clearer vision of what I want to be doing and where I need to be, and the steps that I can take to do that.
Yeah.
And I've also taken a moment to truly appreciate how far I've come in the last few months. And it's a really weird sense of
yeah.
pride.
Yeah, good.
See
good.
What I mean?
I'm not
yeah.
jealous at all because I have none of that, and I genuinely don't envy it. I was going to okay. do a joke and be like, oh,
I felt awful. I immediately went back to feeling guilty, and I was like, oh, now I'm at rock bottom.
No. Well, I can't even make the joke, buddy. Like, it's difficult to see internally. Like, you don't have we've got a mirror by the front door, and I check in the morning. I've got a raging acne spot on my nose or something before I go and prepare food for people. But we don't have an internal one of those. It's just, it's impossible.
Yeah.
But I see you, and I see you improving, and I see you getting better.
Thanks, man.
I was going to make a joke, be like, oh, yeah, I'm so jealous because I have none of that. But like,
Dude. Bro, are you kidding? You're the biggest source of inspiration for me. It's insane. No, I watch you, go.
You need to change that immediately.
Absolutely not.
Immediately. What are you rating the Joker?
I've watched you go from strength to strength to strength, and it can be the smallest steps possible, but you do it with such fucking ferocity and such determination that I'm like, I need that spine. That's where I'm, because you are so certain on, like, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah.
Whether it's a mistake or not, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You will go, this might help, and then you do it with your full being. And if it's not the right thing, you admit it with your full being. And I'm like, I just don't get how someone can just walk that tall and proud into a solid brick wall and go, you know what I mean? I did just walk into that. I might have broke my nose. This is where I'm going. Bye bye.
Paint a smile with it. Also, 6.
Smash it. Sorry. We're way above 6, by the way.
What are you rating Todd Phillips 2019, The Joker?
9 out of 10.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with 10 out of 10.
Okay, yeah, fair.
I think, for me, this is a perfect movie because anything I would change about it would make it worse.
Same.
And there's that smile at the end where he takes Frank Sinatra's, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream, but this world's going to turn either way. There's a book I read called The Stranger by a French guy, Albert Camus. And in the story of The Stranger, he shoots a man and he goes on trial and he's asked to feel sorry about it. And he doesn't. He never does. And the book is him having these meetings with this priest trying to sort of get through the morality of it all.
Yeah.
And he never does. And spoiler warning, he ends up sentenced to death. And as he's looking up to the stars on his last night, he's kind of looking at the stars and he's confident in the knowledge. I looked up and beheld the benign indifference of the universe. It doesn't care.
Wow.
Right? I killed a guy. The stars don't care. I'm going to die tomorrow. They don't care. They're benignly indifferent to anything that happens here. And I think Arthur Fleck realizes that halfway through this movie and goes, what they're doing to me doesn't matter. I've been shown time and time again that there are no real consequences for what they're doing to me. Nobody cares. So why don't I start doing it to them and then at least I'll be enjoying my life.
Yeah, dude. Wow.
And to do that Frank Sinatra song where he giggles to himself, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream, and then he laughs. And she goes, oh, what's funny? He goes, oh, you wouldn't get it. And then this blue world keeps spinning round.
Damn, man. Yeah, there's so much to this film. Like,
I think that's why it's a 10 for me. It has to be. Okay. I see you've written something in the game, and then we've got quite a few comment corners, so it's going to be a long episode unless we hurry up.
Yeah, I do have a game, bud.
Right.
It is. It's a quiz.
Oh, okay. I'm up for this.
Yeah. It's called, which celebrity has this mental disorder?
Absolutely not. We're not doing that. We're never doing that. Nope.
Just one. All right. Nope. It's not that bad. No. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. Right. Which hugely popular comedian / actor who played Fire Marshal Bill on In Living Color was diagnosed with ADHD at a very young age? George Carlin, Jim Carrey, Robin Williams, or Jerry Seinfeld?
Not doing it. Comment Corner's really good this week.
Which famous NASA astronaut, the second man to walk on the moon, spoiler, Rob, suffers from bipolar disorder?
Nope, not doing it. Right. This is important, Ben. This is important. Joe and James.
0 out of 10.
You don't know this. You don't know this.
Okay.
A couple weeks back, a couple months back, really, somebody got in touch with a really meaningful message where they were sort of talking about how they weren't doing too well and that they, you know, they've thought about doing a podcast. And you and I basically bullied them and were like, just do it.
The sports show. Champions of Cinema, that's what it's called.
And they said, we will get started. I did a couple of Zoom calls and talked about the basic stuff that tripped us up for ages.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Did some mentoring, mate.
Oh, check you out.
That makes it sound way nicer than it was.
Constant source of inspiration. You do this stuff in the shadows and then just reveal it months later. Like it's another.
But.
Yeah, so a few months ago, I was Mother Teresa.
far from it. It was mostly me complaining about you.
That's fine. Oh, I take it back immediately. In the sea.
Now, they've got in touch and they have said that they wanted to reach out and say that they are 8 episodes published.
Hey.
One in edit and one due to be recorded on Thursday. They are still loving the process, learning a lot from each and every episode and getting a lot out of the experience.
I love this. I love this.
They are champions of cinema. I've listened to a few episodes. They have no right to be as good as they are, given how short a time they've been doing it.
Okay.
They've had a little grace period now. They've had a run-up, which is, I think, we kind of said would be nice for them to have. Now's the time to turn on the tap of love and say to each and every one of our listeners, go check out Champions of Cinema podcast. They are incredible. We also got a lovely email from Helen Homer.
We did. Now, Helen Homer works at the Boardroom Gaming Cafe, and she is... It's almost criminal how good her cheesecakes are. She's incredible. She has listened to every single episode that we've done ever, and she did it in like 2 months. It's an incredible feat.
I've been there. I watched all of Game of Thrones in like 2 weeks.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's so much cocaine energy. It's unreal.
I was in a depressive episode at the time, so I just lived on the sofa. But yes, well done, Helen. Thank you.
Right, so she's emailed us in, and she has some points to make, which are all incredible. I'm going to read this email that she sent in. It's quite long, so bear with me. Dear Ben and Rob, I started listening to the podcast back in July with the Aliens episode.
Hey.
I came for the ego boost about the cheesecake comments and stayed for the fabulously entertaining conversation, wonderfully open mental health discussion, intelligent and interesting analysis, and amazingly heartwarming friendship. That is the sweetest sentence that I've ever read out loud for this show. Thank you so much. After cherry picking some of my favorite titles, I decided I need to go back to the Spotify beginning because we deleted a bunch of it.
Even the Spotify beginning is rough. We've learned in real time, and I listen back to the early ones and I cringe so hard.
I can't listen to elves anymore. So I needed to go back to the Spotify beginning and listen to all the episodes. I've just finished and I've absolutely loved it. Feel like I need a badge now. After consuming all episodes, I have the following takeaways. One, I am appalled that Rob hasn't seen Home Alone, Short Circuit, or Matilda. Thank you, Helen.
It's because I'm classy. I don't watch children's films.
Matilda's the best superhero that's ever existed. Short Circuit's amazing. What's wrong with you? Home Alone, I'll agree, but that's fine. I don't believe he actually grew up in the 90s. You definitely need to do an 80s childhood classic season. This includes the 90s, as the best of the 80s happened in the early 90s. And that's so unbelievably true.
Yeah.
After the grilled cheese series and exploitation cinema, following the much earlier psychopathy testing, I am worried about Ben.
Yeah, we all are. Join the queue.
Yeah, same. I'm with you. With extensive, careful listening, I have established that Ben's catchphrase is, it literally blew my tits off, and Rob's is, you can't ironically fuck a donkey.
You can't. You're doing it.
Yeah. Whether
you're doing it with irony or not.
Yeah. It will blow your tits off. I really enjoy listening to discussions of films I would struggle to watch. Horror, I'm not a fan. You guys make almost, with a little asterisk, anything fun. And then in brackets, the asterisk is zone of interest excluded.
Helen, thank you so much for getting in touch. I would like to do a slight tweak going forward. We talk a lot about how we're doing on here.
Yeah.
We got a lot of lovely messages this week. We got Helen's. We got ones from Champions of Cinema. Go listen to them. We also got Bruce, Tony Berry, Ashraf Issa. Now, we talk a lot about how we're doing on here, but I got a few messages this week that were telling us how other people, listeners, were doing. I think it'd be really useful for us to share some more of that. So if you could email us, dear listener, a little snapshot of your worries or your troubles or your whimsies to everymovieeveruk@gmail.com and just make sure, you know, we send us anything, we'll listen, but just if you're happy for it to be read out on the show, let us know. If you don't let us know, we won't read it out. And we'll be your agony uncles. I think the overriding thing that I see from every message that we get from people is that we are kind of all trying our best together, and when none of us are really particularly proud of what our best is, I think it would be useful for us to all sort of come together and go, oh, hang about. We're not doing this alone. You know, just send us your woes and we'll fix all your problems for you.
Yeah, We're going to be semi-professional agony uncles going forward, right? I'm Uncle Ben and Uncle Rob.
Send us your spicy rice.
Oh, yes. Uncle Ben's spicy rice corner.
Yes,
buddy. Send us them recipes.
We are so desperately over time. I'm looking at the counter and just... I cannot leave this out, Ben. We are starting a potentially long-running collaboration.
Okay. Who with?
There's a man called Jake. You can find him on Instagram as JakeLeeArmy182, and he does webcomics that are so desperately funny that I'm furious.
I love this guy.
Guess who's doing a collaboration post this week?
Wait, he's doing something with us. We're doing something with him.
Yeah. So go check out...
Why? He's so much funnier.
I know. So go check out JakeLeeArmy182.
Please do.
On Instagram.
It's incredible.
And he's done a little Joker. Little Joker commemorative webcomic this week.
Stop it. I need to... All right, I'm going to go have a look.
Yeah,
I'm
do it, do it, do it, do it.
All right.
That is far more than all the time we have for this week.
It is. We genuinely, wholeheartedly appreciate you hanging out with us. We appreciate it's a Monday. It's the start of your week. Your time is precious and valuable, and you've spent it with us, and we thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
We really,
honestly,
really do.
We love you.
Ben is now going to reward you for that time spent by wrapping up the thoughts, themes, and feelings of this week's movie into a little Monday motivational pep talk, whereas me, being the cynical one, will just do what society always does and tell you to consume.
If you're feeling downtrodden, if people are letting you down, if the system is letting you down, it's not your fault. It's Thomas Wayne's fault. That rich, rich, rich Bellend. And Tiny Bruce? Why does he get the treehouse full of torches, huh? No. Pull out your red nose. Go knock on the door. Hey, buddy, I might be your baby. You're going to get punched by a butler, but don't worry, you're going to catch him in the bathroom. And you know what you're going to do then? Get punched in the face by Daddy Moneybags. Because you know why? Because crazy mommy slating at Thomas Wayne. Stop. Saying, hey, I need your help.
This isn't what we need. Your boy needs your help. This isn't what we need.
Weird penny fleck. Still... Still kind of would, though. Also, because he'll and when he does, juggalo.
Ben, I cut like the last 30 seconds off for sure.
That's life. That's what all the people say.